The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This past week, voters across the United States made a historic choice. They chose between electing the first female president of the United States or the first convicted felon. And now Donald Trump, the 45th president, will return to the White House as the 47th. What does this mean for the country, for Illinois, and for the future? We're going to talk about it with Democratic Chicago Congressman Mike Quigley. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. District Democrat Michael Quigley has been serving on Capitol Hill for more than a dozen years, and he's watched the House go from Democratic control to Republican. He has been a member of the House Intelligence Committee. He co-chairs the Congressional Ukraine Caucus. He's vice chair of the House LGBTQ Equality Caucus, and he was a Cook County Commissioner for more than a decade. I think almost all of your roles will be affected by the return of President Donald Trump. Congressman Mike Quigley, welcome back.
Great to be back. Thank you. I wish it was under different circumstances.
I can understand that. We're conducting this interview via Zoom. And Congressman, let's get to the most basic question first. What does Donald Trump's victory say about him and about the electorate?
Yeah, the way you positioned it at the beginning was made it sound even worse than I'm feeling, right? The fact that we had the opportunity to elect the first woman president, and instead we chose to elect the first president with a conviction. Look, it has far-ranging consequences at the local, state, national, international level, and into the future. I mean, something that got almost no coverage, no salience at all during the election was, frankly, what I think the issue that future generations will be most angry about with us, and that is climate change, right? The Trump administration has called it a hoax. They pulled us out of the Paris Climate Accord and seem dead set to repeal most of the progress made under the Biden administration with the Inflation Reduction Act. So that's just sort of the future. And we can talk domestically. We can talk about what's going to mean to Chicago and the country. Those are going to have long-term impacts. But I guess what I wanted to say first was this. There's no crying in baseball or politics. You get up the next day, there's work to be done. Unfortunately, we've been through this before 8 years ago when we woke up with a Trump presidency. And we acted strongly and did the best we could under the circumstances. And that's what we have to do now.
But I think what makes things different now is that he was a new president. He was a president that, frankly, they knew only about him what he told them. This time, he comes in with a track record. And people, there's no question that people did not know who they were voting for this time. There's no question that they didn't know the things that were that might be considered negatives in almost anyone else. So, and that goes back to the initial question I asked: what does it say about him and the kind of person, the kind of campaigner he is, that none of that was disqualifying?
Yeah, look, if anything, he's tenacious. I think it was important for him in his mind to vindicate himself. I also think it was a survival. He understood that he can now pardon himself. President Biden said he's running so he can stay out of jail. I think there's an element of truth to that in all of this. What it says about us is very disturbing, in that you're right. The country did this with its eyes open. On the other hand, I think candidate Trump, before the election, his first election, said he could shoot somebody in the street and still keep his voters. He could do whatever he wants. Part of that is a denial, in that people feel very strongly about the issues that President Trump focuses on. And they're in denial about the reality of the situation. The way I described it is, you and I grew up with the notion that people would say, I'll believe it when I see it. You almost get the impression now that they think, I'll see it when I believe it. There's a denial about January 6th. As you know, I was in the room where it happened on January 6th. And the days that followed that bloody insurrection, that coup attempt led by this president, leadership in the Republican Party was uniform in laying the responsibility at then President Trump. And then the weeks and months that followed, they pulled back on that. And his followers were all too willing to believe the big lie that this was faked, that it's just one example of a group that seems to be supporting President Trump, even though it's against their interest. In the weeks that led up to the election, I was speaking to the diaspora of European residents of Chicago, Eastern European in particular. Tell him, I had been to Ukraine now 4 times during the war, Poland 5 times. I'd learned from our leaders, military leaders, Polish, Ukrainian, that if Ukraine falls, Poland is next, Moldova is next, the Baltics. But yet, obviously, he got a tremendous number of votes from those communities. Seemingly that they understood this, but in a strange denial that it would actually take place. So those are just two examples of a disconnect that I have a hard time understanding, but we have to live with.
And we're going to circle back to all of those touch points, but talking about the room where it happened, as we are talking, the balance of power in Congress appears to be in flux too. What's your sense of what the landscape is going to look like as the smoke clears? There may have been some votes and pronouncements this morning that I haven't even heard about yet. But
no, it isn't finalized yet. We probably won't know until sometime next week because of the Veterans Day holiday and the weekend. There'll be some more tranches of votes released. In the end, we are behind on the Democratic side. There is still a chance we wrest control of the House, but it's frankly an uphill fight. The numbers will be close, though, and that will impact this. I mean, it's possible that the House will be controlled by 2 or 3 seats. As you know, that means how many people show up that day to vote will often impact this. But it also means something else. If the vote is that close, particularly if the Republicans are in control by a handful of votes, it gives the extremist on the farthest right a disproportionate influence that in the last Congress led to dysfunction, led to ousting yet another speaker, and led to moving the Republicans even farther to the right than they normally are. So the bottom line is, it's not good news for democracy. If the Republicans are in control by just a handful of votes, because quite honestly, it led to a real dysfunction.
Well, even let's face it, even on the Democratic side, if it's a small margin, that last person in, i.e. Joe Manchin, at another time, becomes the most powerful person in the, in the chamber. And that's isn't that another danger? There's one, the group of extremists, but then there's the other, the last guy, the last vote.
Look, and that's right. The fact of the matter is, if someone acts irresponsibly in a selfish manner, they can skew policy to one extreme or another, or make it impossible to function, to get anything done. So there's not much we can do but to try to act responsibly and try to act on a bipartisan basis. You know, our foreign policy has already shifted pretty dramatically because of the shifts on the Republican side. We grew up under the Reagan doctrine, right? The head of the Republican Party in our lifetime, President Reagan's policy that we will resist and help our allies resist Soviet aggression at any cost. Well, when we were voting in the last year on Ukraine supplementals, which is as extreme a Soviet aggression as you can get, only about half of the Republicans would vote for that, a little less than half. Where does that go now when you have a president who has called Putin complimentary terms, likes Putin, supports him? The senator from Ohio, Vance, said Ukraine isn't worth fighting for. So, you know, I think it takes and enables the far right on the Republican side to go even to the greater extreme, which will influence policy, not just in Ukraine, but in the Pacific Rim, and obviously, you know, with China specifically, and obviously in the Middle East.
Right. Well, let's talk about Ukraine, because that is at the top of the list of concerns. What is your worry about the future of Ukraine, and what are you hearing from the Ukrainians?
I was there a week ago, and they're obviously very concerned. Now, you know, they're fighting a fight as the underdog. And most people thought that war would be over in days, if not weeks, instead of now almost 3 years, because of their historic will to succeed. But their manpower is really been taxed because they're fighting a much larger foe. And the supplementals they need from the U.S. and from NATO are life-saving. So I left Ukraine very concerned about the situation, recognizing that it will probably turn on who wins the White House. And unfortunately, I think it went the wrong way. And there's a real risk that at the best case scenario, Ukraine is forced with literally a gun in its head to try to have a peace deal where they don't lose more than half their country. Worst case scenario, Ukraine falls, and Putin sees this as an opportunity to exploit the situation. He has a much larger manpower force, Putin does, and he has the ability to treat his troops like cannon fodder. You know, we learned that he has some troops out there with 1 or 3 days of training, you know, people from rural areas that he doesn't care about, prisoners, conscripts, and this is a victory for him. And unfortunately, a victory for autocrats everywhere who are also eyeing this race in Iran, North Korea, and China.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. What are the security concerns you have? I mean, who's next on the checklist? Is it NATO itself? Is it Taiwan?
The war did a couple things, some good, some bad. It stripped the veneer off of NATO's strength, right? In terms of industrial military capacity, we learned that we had shortcomings, but certainly NATO did. Its forces weren't as strong as we would have imagined. But President Biden, I think, did a good job uniting NATO. We saw NATO expand. I think there's a real fear with a president who said Putin can do whatever he wants to NATO. NATO needs us. I think there's real concerns that that NATO is weakened, that their determination to help Ukraine will be weakened. And this builds upon itself in the opposite direction that we were going. So it's a bleak picture. We're going to have to message as much as we possibly can those Republicans who still care about that, and the Democrats to push back on the president's desire. But if he doesn't want to do a supplemental, which Ukraine needs, at some point, Ukraine isn't going to be able to defend itself, its energy infrastructure, and it will be very difficult for them to survive.
Now, do you believe that that China is going to be watching this and see an opening where they could be more aggressive against Taiwan, and maybe the U.S. won't rush to its aid as it almost certainly would have in any other circumstance?
Yeah, it's hard to tell exactly where they are on this in the Republican administration, but obviously it is an area of concern.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
The isolationist bent, as we learned from 1939 on, has never been a strong deterrent. I think it's an opening and a concern that not just for China, but also what our allies in the Pacific Rim see to this and how they act. What we see in the Middle East, what we see in North Korea, they're all openings there. And you know, Secretary Austin, General Milley all said, if we don't halt Putin's aggression here, we're just begging for more bloodshed and inviting the need to double our defense budget. So there's a lot of work to be done when we go back to D.C., and we're up for it.
You're listening to News Radio 780's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and I'm talking with 5th District Democratic Congressman Mike Quigley. Before we get into some more domestic affairs, I do want to ask one more thing about international affairs. I've long thought that we in the American media don't pay enough attention to international affairs, and I think people don't feel as invested, unless you're from one of those communities, in seeing the U.S. be more internationally active. And that may be part of the problem, that people aren't thinking, that Ukraine makes a difference to us, that Taiwan makes a difference to us.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it's unfortunate. I mean, some of this is just maybe a failure in our education system of history and civics and why this all matters. My favorite speech that FDR made was his last inaugural, perhaps one of the lesser known. He reminded us in his shortest inaugural speech that what we have learned is that we are dependent on the fate of nations far away. And that's still true today. The world is more interconnected than it ever has been. And our national security is dependent upon the national security of our allies from an economic, political point of view, certainly military. And our political dysfunction has created a national and an international security threat. So I'd like to think cooler heads will prevail, that will help people understand this, that Trump's military leaders said, if you don't help other countries with foreign aid, you better buy me more bullets. That interconnection, that friendship with allies is important to our national security. As you said, I served on the Intel Committee for 8 years. It's something that was embedded in what I learned in that process, that those countries can help us not just with their military help, economic help, but what they teach us in terms of intelligence to keep us safe every night. We all need each other, whether we understand that or not.
Well, let's turn and meld international affairs with domestic. How do you expect the immigration issue is going to play out from this point on? That obviously was the key issue, or a key issue, in the election.
You know, it obviously was. And, you know, what American voters were told was that if there's a problem, you can blame an immigrant for it, right? Immigrants were responsible for inflation. Immigrants were responsible for any issues with crime, despite the fact that all the facts and statistics say just the opposite, that what we always needed to do was pass comprehensive immigration reform. The various sectors in our economy echoed that the farm sector, manufacturing, hospitality industries all said, we need comprehensive immigration reform, but we need to have a pathway to citizenship. It grows the economy. It is our strength. It's not a weakness. And we were told just the opposite. All this while we secure the border. Now, remember, there was a deal a year ago on a bipartisan basis out of the Senate with Republican Senator Lankford to do a lot to secure the border. And Trump publicly said, no, we don't want to do that because we don't want to help the Democrats on the election. So I suspect what you're going to see is more extreme measures to secure the border than would be effective. And I can't imagine they'll try to do what Senator Vance said, and that's to forcibly deport immigrants. If we do that, we'll have an extraordinary mess on our hands that'll have implications for who we are as a people, and will wreak havoc on our economy and our social fabric.
Do you think we will see that original bipartisan deal on the other immigration reforms come back?
I think you'll see extreme measures that may not necessarily be as effective and as thoughtful. You know, you'll certainly hear about a border wall. What I was told when I went to the border several times was border walls may be effective in a few small locations, but typically a 20-foot wall meets a 22-foot ladder, and it's not particularly effective. It only deters someone from crossing the border for a few minutes. That there are other measures that are more effective, particularly detection and the ability to move along the border. So there are effective ways to secure the border, and that's what we certainly need to do. And then there's measures that appeal to our lesser angels. But you know, my bigger concern besides that is, will they go forward with forcible detention and removal? And then we're going to have a real mess. Do I think we'll ever go to a comprehensive immigration reform? I just don't see it in the next 10 years. And it's a shame, because particularly the Dreamers will be the losers in a situation where they have absolutely no fault.
Do you have any concerns, and this developed toward the last half of President-elect Trump's campaign, about Elon Musk having the ear of the president, as well as control of the social media platform formerly known as Twitter and now called X?
I have a whole bunch of concerns about Elon Musk, and I've had them for a while. The fact of the matter is, the control over that social media giant and how they will use that as their main messaging, and given the other concerns that exist there, I have the concerns that he has control over a lot of issues that can impact our national security. And as he says, he is in regular communication with Putin. And the president-elect has said positive things about Putin. It is a very strange alliance that concerns me, that a vicious autocrat such as Putin will have a seemingly warm place in not just Elon Musk with all his connections, but the president. You know, and Elon Musk, given that role, he is supposed to report all his communications with foreign leaders. I'd like to think that he has done that. I'm not sure he's going to feel the need to under a Trump administration.
Well, let's turn to one of the other major issues, at least for the Democrats, reproductive rights. Notwithstanding all of the rhetoric about that, President-elect Trump did pretty well among women. What does that portend for issues like abortion and gender and pay equity and such?
I begin with one of the methods the president used in his first term that was most destructive to reproductive health, and that's the ability to pick next Supreme Court justices. They overturned Roe, the court he picked. We're already at a numerical disadvantage of extraordinary proportions, and he's going to have 4 years not just to choose the next Supreme Court with the majority in the Senate, but all those federal judges who can do real harm throughout these districts across the country on all sorts of issues relating to reproductive health or health and the other issues that you just mentioned. They will be in place long after Trump is gone, putting that influence and that power on what I think are the wrong side of those decisions for the rest of our lives. So as I said, there's no wringing of hands in all this, but there's very real concerns of what this is going to mean for the rest of our lives and policy decisions that take us in the opposite direction of where they should.
So then the question is, what do the Democrats do now moving forward? And what are the lessons that we've learned moving forward?
Let me focus on the lessons. You know, as always, postmortem after all this, you know, there is the, well, obviously the reason you lost is this, this, and this. But, you know, Monday morning quarterbacks always have, perfect average. They everything they say seems to make sense given the circumstances. It's going to take a while to fully appreciate and understand what took place and why and how to adapt to that. We were here 8 years ago, and we went back to work in Congress, and in 2 years, we won back the House. You know, we still have a chance to win the House in this term, but if that fails, you know, how we message is going to be particularly important. We led the Russian investigation as a member of the Intel Committee, the first impeachment investigation. But, for me, it was messaging to the jury, right? It was those undecideds, those independent voters that put Trump over the top. The fact of the matter is, I was never speaking to his base or my base. I was speaking to the swing voters and those independent voters, explaining what this means. Look, it's frustrating. It's not an immediate result, but it's what you have to do to move forward and get our country back on track.
What's the thing at this stage that gives you hope?
Yeah, it what gives me hope is just how hard the Democrats worked, how they had such an extraordinary operation. I was in Michigan in the precincts. I saw the extraordinary effort there and the fact that people did not give up on their democracy then and they won't this time. What gives me hope is a realization that there's a lot to get done and we don't have much choice. We haven't talked much about how these issues affect Chicago, but I'm on the phone talking to the CTA about making sure they have grant agreements in place so we can finish the red line. I'm the ranking Dem on the committee that funds transit and housing. You know, we have got to get these projects done and work in place, assuming that the Trump administration will attempt to claw back those resources. So the fact there's work to be done, and we know how to do it, that gives me hope. And it does absolutely no good just to fret and to point fingers and to be angry. We have to be constructive. And as you say, hope is important, maybe the best of things.
Indeed. I would like to thank Congressman Mike Quigley for spending the half hour with us. And to our listeners, if you want a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. I'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.